the size of this stile. God. I didn't mean to do that. That was my back went there. Of course, this is going to be tick central, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is going to be, well, you'll be all right, but tick magnet timlet will protect you from the ticks here. Because we're not going to tell people where we are again, but the grass is unusually long here, which we really didn't expect.
Yeah.
It's, fortunately, it's dry, so. And once again, it's a howling gale. Almost. Well, it's windy.
It is windy. Looks like rain too.
Yeah, I don't like the look of that over there. Let's see if we can make it through the next hour or so without getting dumped on.
So welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, where we talk about things in Wiltshire that are hidden. My name is Glyn Coy, and as usual this week I have my trusted podcasting partner,
Paul Timlet. You remembered his name?
Yes, again. Very good.
You passed the
first
habit.
You passed the first test.
He's becoming a very unpleasant habit, remembering my name.
Yeah, and another habit we seem to be getting into is recording these things outside.
Yes.
Which is all very nice, but occasionally throws some logistical challenges, like funny-shaped stiles.
Unusually high stiles.
Where you nearly do yourself a mischief trying to get into.
Be in bed for a week after falling off that one.
Yeah, yeah. So when are we going to reveal where we are this week?
Oh, in a bit. But it's windy again, so hopefully the mics will do a good job like they did at Eddington of covering the noise of the wind up. The dead cat seems to work pretty well. And we are truly hidden here.
We are hidden in Hidden Wiltshire,
hidden
actually.
In Hidden Wiltshire.
We're hiding from people that might tell us to go.
Yes, because we're somewhere. No, we don't trespass. We're allowed here because we come over a stile. We're allowed to come here.
Yeah.
But, I suppose a sneak preview, the MOD or landmark, seeing us sitting here looking suspicious, might have a thing or two to say about it. But I think we're all right because there's nobody around and they've mostly buggered off on holiday, haven't they?
Let's hope.
Yeah.
So, as usual, we do the last few weeks in Wiltshire, which is more of a challenge, actually, when we do this podcast once a month, because our memories aren't what they are, especially yours, Paul.
Yes.
And we can never remember what we've been up to for the last month. But thankfully, you've been organised and written some stuff down that we can actually refer to. So.
Yeah, although you'll notice that I've done nothing. So even though we've gone once a month, I've been nowhere in Wiltshire. I've been a couple of other places, but I haven't been anywhere in Wiltshire. So I've got nothing to say.
Oh, okay.
So that's the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening.
That's all right. I've got a couple of things to talk about,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I did the other night is that was quite interesting is, this is the wonders of Twitter. I got tagged onto a Twitter thread about crop marks in a field at All Canning's Cross.
Yeah.
And Tim Dorr, who owns the farm there at All Canning's Cross, who we had on our podcast a few weeks ago about the long barrow at All Canning's, he'd been walking up in the hills above there and noticed quite a lot of distinctive crop marks in the field from the dry weather. So David Carson tagged me in and said, fancy going out with your drone? So the next night I went up there and took all these photographs for Tim and put them up on social media. And you can see some of the archaeology in the field. There were Iron Age pits. He said that in 2004, I think they did a dig in the field and discovered a midden from the Iron Age. So there's quite a lot going on there. And then you've got the Iron Age hill fort of Ryberry Camp above it, so we know there was an Iron Age settlement there.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff.
So those pits, are they definitely Iron Age storage pits? I mean, who's...
Well, that's the theory.
Who reckons that?
Tim.
Tim, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Because when we went to Hippenscombe, we did the walk there, the Wiltshire Museum one, and there were some pits there above Hippenscombe in the hills. And of course, I was talking to David Dawson, who was with us, and because I'd read somewhere that they were storage pits, and he was not quite so sure. He was uncertain, but he wasn't sure. But you know, different pits. But so the who spotted those crop marks initially?
That Tyndall.
That was Tim, because it's his land, yeah. But there aren't many advantages in very, very dry weather like this. But that's one of them, is you see these crop marks.
Yeah, yeah. I think what he saw was, he could see a circular shape, so he wondered whether there was an unknown henge or circular monument in there. And there does seem to be something worthy of, you know, more exploration. But another guy that looked at it, who's... Toby Driver, he's an aerial archaeologist from Wales. He said that, you know, it's difficult in these type of situations to work out what's actually a natural geology, the natural geology of the chalk and the water runoff versus archaeology. But anyway, he said it was a fantastic set of crop marks, whichever way.
Yeah. And no donkey. You couldn't see the donkey.
I forgot to look for that. I'll have to go back.
The mythical 9th, 10th, or whatever it is.
So someone else asked me a question. Someone else asked me a question when I put the photos up on Twitter. They said, "Oh, what's your theory on the stone circle at Tan Hill?" And I thought, "Oh God, here we go. I didn't know about that."
No. But anybody who's wondering what on earth we're talking about, the donkey. There is supposedly a chalk figure at the base of Ryberry Camp. Just by the road there, isn't it? It's the road between, where Devizes and Alton Barnes. So there is supposedly another chalk figure there, and it's because it's supposedly, if it exists at all, is quite crude. People have rather rudely called it a donkey, the white donkey. But when we were talking to Tim Dore, when we did that podcast, he was not so sure whether it's actually there or not. Mm. But it's weather like this, will certainly help locate it if it is there. Of course, the other downside to this sort of weather, or a downside to this sort of weather, is that the army set fire to the plains.
Oh, they do, and they did.
And they did, big star this year. Certainly from shooting where I am, I mean, you could see the fires for miles and miles all across Blackheath.
Yeah.
And, of course, once they go, and a lot of them, they can't fight them because they're out in the impact area where there's a lot of unexploded ordnance. So they just monitor, and they brought in a lot of external brigades, apart from Dorset and Wilts Fire Brigade or Fire Services. They brought in fire brigades from all across the south because it's a real nasty fire.
Yeah.
It lost about a week, but eventually it went out. But of course, the biggest problem was the wind. So apart from the tinderbox conditions, the wind was just fanning the flames quite literally and blowing it right across the plains.
Yeah, yeah. And I know there were a couple of days I saw when they thought the fire had gone, had been put out, and then it would reignite.
That's right. Yeah. But people as far afield as Swindon could smell it and were being advised, certainly around Rorton, I think, to keep their windows closed.
Yeah, yeah.
But pretty nasty.
Sounds like motorbikes.
Yeah. They shouldn't be out here.
Right.
Anyway, other walks. Walks. We haven't talked about the walks at all, have we?
No, not yet.
Elaine has again... Elaine Perkins has been an absolute star and has posted two sort of mini walks on the Facebook site. Again, she, because she's a contributor and she contributes articles and blogs, she posts these on the closed group, which is reserved for people who contribute to the website, as we've explained before. So in order to make them more widely available so that other people can see them, she's kindly agreed to do one as a blog, which we'll put on the website and put on the open Facebook page as well. And that's one that she did around Amesbury, of all places.
Right.
Or Shamesbury, as my kids call it. But I think it's the longest continuously inhabited settlement in the whole of the country, So people have lived at Amesbury for longer, continuously, than anywhere else, which is extraordinary, really. Especially when you look at Amesbury, you think, why?
I know.
But
it must have had some redeeming features at one point.
Yeah, I'm struggling to find out what they are. But she turned up some amazing finds up there. Anyway, she's going to write all that up, and I'll be putting that up, hopefully, during the course of the coming week. Another one Elaine did was, I think she must live sort of Old Sarum way, but it was Old Sarum, Little Durnford, and the Pusey and Avon Trail is what she called it. I think that's a tank.
It is, isn't it?
It sounds like, it's certainly a tracked vehicle. So that was a nice little one and that she put on the Facebook group. Again, some lovely pictures. She does take a really good photograph. So that was Elaine's work. You went to East Noyle and did a walk.
I did.
Where is your report? I haven't seen it yet. You said you were going to write it up.
It will be, by the time this podcast goes out and the listeners are listening to this, it will be
you
up.
Will have done
so
it.
Shut up.
Yes, sir.
Because also, by the time this podcast comes out, I'll actually be back from holiday.
You'll be back from holiday?
I'll be back from holiday, right. Yeah.
I was going to say, you'll be sitting under an umbrella in the pouring rain in Ireland.
Yeah.
But you'll have finished that.
I'll have finished that. So if you're thinking about trying to burgle my house, you can't. I'm back.
Damn it. You haven't got anything worth stealing, have you?
No, I know. Oh, I don't these days. But yeah, East Noyle I did. And yeah, that will be written up. Oh, yeah, there's a tank over there.
Yes, there is one.
I hope it doesn't come over here.
Yeah. Oh, good luck to him.
So that gives it, we're definitely on military land, that's for sure.
Yeah, we've given that bit away. But
yeah, East Noyle, the birthplace of Christopher Wren, no less.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did a circular walk there between East Noyle and West Noyle, and back through some of the woodland there, Macintosh Davidson Wood, and that. It was a really nice walk, actually, on a very hot day. But yeah, beautiful scenery.
It's a lovely part of the world, isn't it?
It is, very
so,
much.
So, you took a photograph of, is it Cloud House or Cloud
House? Cloud House,
yeah. Which is now a sort of like a respite centre or a rehabilitation
centre. Yeah, it's a rehab centre.
Flimmin' this is that.
I'm wondering if the mics will pick that up.
Yeah, probably. It's not quite a tank, it's one of those things with a small gun on it.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a tank, but it's tracked and it's bloody noisy.
Yeah, and it's going blooming fast.
Yeah.
Yes, Clouds.
Clouds House.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What was it originally? Do you know?
I don't know. I'll look that up by the time I write it up. But
because it's marked on the Ordnance Survey map, and I keep looking at it, thinking, help. And it rings a bell, and it may well be I'm confusing it with is it Lawrence of Arabia? T. Lawrence lived on the edge of Bovington Camp.
Yes,
what is now Bovington
he did.
Camp.
I've been to his house. Yeah,
and I think that house is that called Clouds?
It may well be. Yeah,
yeah. Maybe I'm confusing the.
But
two.
I mean, there is. It's a mansion house, so it's bound to have a history.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'll look into that and write it up by the time I get around to writing the blog.
And it is a rehabilitation centre.
It's a rehab centre. Yeah, 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 yeah. For very rich people.
Yeah. As they all are.
Yeah, what a place to go into rehab, though. Mm, I mean, it's very rural, cut off, bit of an oasis, really.
Did you try the pub? Did you go to the pub there?
No, I didn't, no.
It's supposed to be very good.
Yeah, I believe so.
I've ridden past it many a time and think, oh, if only it was lunchtime and you could pop in.
But there were a couple of vantage points I saw. I mean, one of them is Windmill Hill itself. There is a windmill up there.
Yeah.
But there's a load of benches on the viewpoint there. Look all the way across the Dorset. It's fantastic views.
Maybe that's another venue for an outside recording one day.
Oh, definitely, definitely, most definitely. Recommended.
Other walks, well, as I said, I've not walked anywhere in Wiltshire. Been doing quite a lot of work up at Parsonage Down again. It's seems to be finding more and more things for us to do, and as Stu and I get trained up and we get our tickets enabling us to do all sorts of things. And we get our orders at the beginning of the day, and rather than having to have the staff with us to keep an eye on us, we're just sent out into the reserve, which is great. But it is taking up a lot of time.
So you haven't been doing much for Hidden Wiltshire then?
No.
I think you should get a pay cut.
how do you reduce from zero? It's a bit like my work at Parsonage Down, where I also earn nothing, zero, nada. As I said in these notes, I did do a couple of walks. Well, one walk really on the Dorset coast, which I know is not on our, but absolutely beautiful. Went in the, turned out to be a very hot day. It was just after all those two super hot days. Actually, no, it was before. It was before then.
Mm.
And just a walk I quite often do with an old friend of mine. Sorry, she's not old, but I've known her for a long time. Down at sort of Wind, well, started at Worth Matravers and then down to sort of Windspit and Dancing Ledge and Seacombe. And so, you know, if you've got your passport ready and want to go into to Dorset, I can recommend it down there. Perhaps not during the summer because it gets quite busy. There's some great places to swim and there's quite a lot of kids go down there. But out of season, beautiful spot. The other place I went, didn't do a walk really, but I went to just stopped off in the New Forest on the way back from. I had to go to Southampton and stopped off in the New Forest, and I was right on the border with Wiltshire, very very nearly, but I was in Hampshire.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I don't think many people realise that Wiltshire does dip into a bit of the New Forest.
It does, and there's, I can never remember it. Landford Woods. I know Natural England, for whom I volunteer. We have a site down there.
Yeah.
I've never actually been to, but...
Yeah, Wiltshire Wildlife Trust has got a place there. Landford Bog, I think it's called.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I went past that. In fact, I saw the signs.
Yeah.
But a funny story, I know I was telling you this the other day, but I stopped off really just a couple hundred metres from the Wiltshire border, and I was driving along one of the little roads that goes across the heathland, and I saw these four trees just standing on their own right out in the heath. I thought, that's photogenic. The light was pretty crappy, but I thought, well, I'll stop and take a picture anyway. So I plodded across from the road across the heath to these trees, and as I'm standing there, and people will know what a cheerful soul I am. I'm never grumpy, always with a smile on my face. These two people came across, and you know how much I love dogs. Seven bloody dogs bounding across towards me. And these people, I mean, I was literally in the middle of nowhere, and they sort of made a beeline straight for me. The dogs were just running everywhere, and there were New Forest ponies out there roaming around, and I thought, this is ridiculous. I mean, it's just, you know, they were bounding all over me. Two of them were wolfhounds, so as big as me, jumping all over me. And I sort of shouted, you know, politely, can you keep your dogs under control, please? And I was more worried about the horses, to be honest, because there was ponies there. And anyway, they came over. Of course, my shot was ruined. The photograph was taken over right in the middle of it. And they came over, and, oh, we're really sorry. They're very friendly. And I said, well, they're not, they seem that friendly when they're jumping all over you. But they were actually a really nice couple. Proper old, well, I suppose they're Hampshire, you know, real sort of West Country accents. Mm. And the guy was sort of pointing across the heath to some Bronze Age burial mounds and barrows, and he was telling me a little bit about that. I must admit, it took me quite a long while just to calm my temper, and I was probably a bit abrupt with him, but you know, of course, we all have to love dogs, don't we, these days?
But, The thing that always cracks me up about that neck of the woods is that the Wiltshire-Hampshire border, goes through a village called No Man's Land.
That's right, that's where it was, just outside it.
It just cracks me up. I mean, who named that village No Man's Land?
And it's quite a nice place. It's not like it's Amesbury or Swindon.
No.
It's actually quite nice.
Oh, dear. Never mind.
But, that's all I've done, I'm afraid. I've got a walk. Actually, I was looking at the OS map the other day, and I found something which I'd never noticed before. I'm not going to say what it is, but it's a walk that I'm going to do, and I think it's the only way to do it as a circular will mean it's about 8 miles. So I couldn't see a way of shortening it, and actually I found somebody. I sort of pieced it together from the OS map, and then I was sort of Googling walks around this particular area, and somebody had already plotted a route exactly the same as the one I've done, so it looks like it's pretty much the only option. But there's some fantastic, or look to be some amazing places on the way.
Yeah,
real sort of certainly hidden to me. I never knew this place existed, so I'm going to try and do that before the next podcast.
So we have done a couple of Wiltshire Museum walks as well, the joint Hidden Wiltshire Museum programme. We did one at Castle Coombe.
Now, I wasn't on that, so tell me about that. How did that go?
That went okay. It was a nice route, actually. I managed to start following the route that you'd already published on the blog, but cut it short.
Yeah.
So I didn't go up to the hill fort or all the way down.
It would take you all day to get up there.
So we kind of did a circuit that brought us into Ford and back up that way. So it was about 5 miles, something like that.
Yeah, that's good.
Very nice part of the world. But we did the one just this week, actually, at Beckhampton Gallops.
Yeah.
It was a very pleasant evening. Lots of lovely views up there.
It was quite sort of murky, wasn't it? In fact, it rained. We did get some drizzle up there. But, it's just... Well, in fact, we were saying before we got there, as we were driving up to Beckhampton from Devizes up the A361, the light was just incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, as photographers, all you want to do is just screech talk, jump out and start taking photographs. But we had people who'd pay to come on a walk to look after, so we had to plough on. And of course, by the time we got to Beckhampton, the light had gone and it was just grey.
Yeah.
But it did mean that we mostly had the place to ourselves, just us and the our guests.
Yeah.
But I was chatting to, there was one couple there, I didn't catch their names, but they said they'd done the Castle Coombe walk with you, and they said they'd really enjoyed it. So that was good to hear. Might be an idea to put that, if you could plot it on OS Maps app and I can add it to the walk that I did.
Yeah, I can do that.
As a shorter version, because mine was about, it was ridiculous, it was about 10 miles and it was hard, it was really hard.
Yeah. I think that's the walk where it was supposed to be 10, but you went off-piste and it was like 13 or 14.
Yes, it did. Yeah, you're right. It did. It was...
Because you went trying to find a route up to that hill fort. And...
Yeah. God, that was... I'm still scarred by that, even though it was a couple of years ago. That was the hard bit. If you didn't do that, then it's a bit easier. But it's still 10 miles is beyond what most people want to do or suggest. So if we could do a 5-mile or...
I can share that. We've got one more walk coming up, which is on the 14th of August, I think, which is up on Fifield Down and the Devil's Den.
Yeah. That one's been put back a week, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So if anybody's thinking, hang on, I thought that was on the 7th of August.
Yeah, we put it back by a week and a day.
We've to move it because somebody's on holiday.
Yep.
And then that is it for this year, I think, isn't it?
That's all the ones we've got planned, unless we come up with any more.
Yeah, there's one possible over at all, I think.
Yeah.
Which initially the plan was to sort of do that at the time of the Open Gardens thing at Orr House, which I'm told is pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
So it'd be good if we could do that.
Yep.
What else? You had an article published, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I had an article published in the Wiltshire Life magazine.
Yeah.
So if you buy this month's copy, you'll see my name in lights and a 2 or 3 page article about blind houses, which...
Did you trot out just the same lame old article then?
I just sent the same one. I hadn't changed it at all. I just said, if you want some words, here you go. Just use this.
It's a good article, actually. So I jest, but that it is a good article. So I'm glad they ran that.
Yeah, so it wasn't much work for me. It was just,
here's the
words, so here's some photos. Yeah.
Were any of my photos in there?
Yeah, they were.
Oh, and my royalties are coming when?
Well, the funny thing is, when I sent them the photos, I said, can you just for ease, can you just credit everything to Glencoy and Paul Timlett? And then when I read the article, your name wasn't mentioned at all.
Funny that, isn't it? Why am I not surprised?
So,
it's all about me, isn't it?
Sorry about that.
Well, you'll be pleased to hear I haven't bought it anyway, so I've never know.
I've bought two copies, so I'll let you have a complimentary copy as your payment.
Yeah, I'll make good firelighters. Actually, I got... it was a different magazine. When I used to commute to London from Greatley, once a month this couple would turn out and give away sort of glossy magazines, and I thought it was Wiltshire Life, but maybe not if they were giving it away for free.
Yeah.
Unless they can't sell it. But something was being given away.
Yeah. But it's quite a nice magazine, actually. Quite a nice glossy magazine. I mean, you wonder how these things are going to survive. But anyway,
it's been going for quite some years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Yeah.
And it's an expensive production. Because I looked at advertising in there for an exhibition a few years ago, and the rates were eye-watering.
Yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
we didn't do it in the end.
Yeah.
Used the local press.
So who knows? We may have future collaborations with the Wiltshire Life magazine. Yeah, it could be a regular thing.
In fact, quite often when I post stuff on Instagram, I sort of hashtag them and occasionally.
Little spider thing.
Well, was it a money spider?
No, it was a great big thing.
What?
Just about to crawl to your face.
Jaws around my neck. Sometimes I do sort of like one of my Instagram posts, but not very often. They obviously hate what I do. so that would be good to do some more stuff with them. And we had an email, didn't we?
We did. Well,
I think we had two now.
Yeah, we do occasionally get emails from people that listen or like what we do, and they thank us, which is nice. And we got one from Bill.
Bill, yeah. And I wrote his surname then.
Bill Palmcutt.
I knew I wouldn't remember. Bill Palmcutt.
Yeah, he sent us a thanks over the podcast we did around Binnell Castle, which is the last one, because he then inspired him to go up there and have another look. He hadn't been there since he was a kid. But, he was very complimentary, and he very cheekily asked if we could have a shout-out. So here you go, Bill.
Yeah.
thanks.
That'll cost you a fiver. In fact, the thing that made me laugh was he said there was a chemistry between us. If only he knew, because when we stopped recording, we were at each other's throats all day.
I did chuckle though, because I thought chemistry, it sounds like we're dating or something.
Yeah.
I can assure you we're not.
Our wives might have something to say about that.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to mention another lovely couple I met the other day. We had a book order from a chap called Simon Lovett, who sadly for him lives in Swindon.
Swindon.
He's a podcast listener. In fact, it's his dad. So anyway, he bought a copy of our book for his dad, John Lovett, who lives in Shrewton. So I hand delivered it. When he and his wife came to the door, I realised that I'd met them and spoken to them a few times because they're one of their other sons lives in Shrewton and who's built not built an entire house but extended a house substantially and have done a fantastic job. It's beautiful. And John, who's Simon's father, and his wife, who I'm ashamed to say I didn't get his wife's name. I did message Simon and said, can you tell me your mum's name, because I want to just give them a shout out on the podcast. But they helped the other son build this beautiful house.
Yeah.
We're chatting on the doorstep, they neither of them had listened to the podcast, and like a lot of people, they think it's a radio program. So I had to explain what a podcast was. But his wife said, "I'll definitely listen to that." So I told her how to do it. So hopefully she'll hear this and. She will hear their surname, if not her first name.
Yeah.
It was lovely to meet them. Right. We should probably
explain where we are.
Where we are, yeah.
Well, funnily enough, we're sitting on the ramparts of what is technically regarded as an Iron Age hill fort, but it doesn't look very hill forty in terms of the location. But we're at Nut Castle.
Yeah. And right next to us, which is why you could hear a tank, or you might have heard the tank, or armoured, whatever it was, the sort of gun thingy on the front. The roads, the transit, the Southern Transit route, I think it's called, goes right past Nut Castle. And it's a concrete road, so anything with tracks makes a hell of a noise.
Yeah, and there's where we are here, actually, there's quite a lot of earthworks, because you've got the shape of the hill fort, which is distinctive and complete, but also there's a couple of Romano-British villages that were here, and there's a lot of earthworks. Yeah. So as we're walking through the field, I was getting muddled up about where I was.
Yeah, and as we were saying earlier, I've never seen it like this. The grass is really long. Normally there are sheep grazing in here. In fact, when we decided to come and record here, I was thinking, the biggest challenge will be not sitting in sheep poo. But there is none. Just man-eating spiders.
Yes.
So we've not seen any ticks yet. Perhaps it wasn't a good idea to sit in the long grass wearing shorts. But so it's quite difficult to make out some of the earthworks. But when the grass is short, when the sheep have nibbled it all down, the earthworks are quite distinctive, if not that high. I mean, there may be, 6 feet between the bottom of the, the ditch
it's
and
one
the,
of
the,
top it's of the one, bank. This is one of these hill forts that's probably better viewed from above.
Yeah, definitely.
With a drone, because you'd get the full shape of it, although you can't technically fly drones up here.
But I don't think this was a defensive settlement, was it?
I think, I don't think so.
As we said before, it's an animal enclosure.
Well, yeah, I think it's one of those things where we just don't know. But I think when I've spoken to a couple of archaeologists and suggested, do you think it could be an animal enclosure? They said, well, yeah, but it's a lot of effort to go to, isn't it, to build this just for animals. But anyway, we'll leave that one to the experts.
Well, I suppose if they're trying to protect their animals from marauding poachers, you know, marauding tribes trying to nick their sheep or cows or whatever, then you would build earthworks.
Yeah, or maybe it was a marketplace, who knows.
Yeah, yeah. A bit like, Yarnbury Castle became there's a huge sheep fair. But this is pretty substantial, this, isn't it?
It is. When you sat inside it, you can see it's pretty big.
Yeah. But again, like so many places around here, the views are incredible. We're looking over to the, I'm pointing now, to the east, which is that way. That's, I think, looking over beyond Amesbury.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're looking at over there. I can remember it's Beacon Hill or Telegraph Hill out that way. And then south, can't see too far because there's a hill in the way. There's the road that goes, the B390 from Chitton to Heytesbury. And then there's a hill above that, which again, fantastic walking country out there, which we've done a few times. Looking the other way, looking whatever direction that is, sort of northwest, I guess. We're right next to the Imber Ranges, so really the track that is next to this, not the, hang on, I'm pointing the wrong way, that's the Imber Range out there, so that would be north, wouldn't it? Out there, which is directly in front of us to the north of the castle, is the full extent of the Imber Range, which we bang on about endlessly on this podcast, but it's a great place. But literally a couple hundred metres from where we're sitting, you cannot go any further. It's all permanently off limits.
Yep.
But with my special yellow card from Natural England, I have been out there a few times. There is some great prehistory, a lot of barrows and things and stuff that's still remarked on the map. So I have sort of driven out with permission on the tracks that we're looking at here, and there is so much stuff there. It's so much prehistory. It's just such a shame that we'll probably never be able to see it, just because there's so much unexploded ordnance out there. It would take forever to clear it all up. Real shame.
Anyway, we've waffled on long enough now. We're going to get complaints again.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I suppose
we should talk about
get on and talk about what we came here to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about let's move on to the main topic of this week. So this week's main topic is all about, well, really, the main star of this topic is the Wiltshire and Barts Canal.
It is.
And this is all about something you wrote up. Actually, this is one of those blog posts you put on the website that's had like thousands of views or something. Yeah, I don't know. It's been, I don't know who's reading it.
I don't know. I was looking at it yesterday when I was doing my jogging my memory as to what if I wrote about in February this year, because I can't remember what I did yesterday. Never mind February this year. And I was sort of scrolling through the website, and generally speaking, the blogs get 200-300 views, and this one's got 1,100 or something.
Oh, it was 1,500.
1,500, wasn't it?
So
it's
yeah,
I mean, all me actually. I keep going back into it.
We do have quite some of our posts on the blog have got like thousands of views or reads, and some generally they all get a few hundred. Some maybe attracts a bit more interest, but this one about the Wilts and Barts Canal really attracted the interest of many people.
Well, I think. I did wonder whether it was anything to do with the fact that I called it Laycock and the Wilts and Barts Canal.
Well, that's what I thought.
Whether Laycock attracted the attention.
That's what I thought. But then I saw that when you posted about it on Facebook, it had been copied to the Wilts and Barts Canal Facebook page and all their social media. So
right.
it sort of expanded out into their readership as well.
Oh, well, that's good. Because it was one of those blogs that was kind of the walk and which led to the blog was a long time in the making. And as I said in the blog, I sort of first stumbled across the Wilts and Barts Canal because I didn't even know it existed.
Well, no, I mean, everyone knows about the Kennet and Avon.
Yeah.
That's well known and it's fully operational and people live on it.
Yeah.
But the Wilts and Barts Canal is pretty much unknown to a lot of people.
Mostly disused. But I discovered it when I took my my son's car to a garage at Pewsham, just outside Chippenham, for a service. And they said, well, it's only going to take 2 or 3 hours. So I thought, well, I'll just go for a walk.
Yeah.
I looked at the map and I thought, well, what's this? Disused canal. So I went across the fields to have a look and found Pewsham Locks, which was back then, I can't remember what year that must have been in, was that 2020, I suppose. Or was it 21? Oh, it doesn't matter. But when I went, it was an absolute hive of activity. There was loads of people working on the locks. And it was a pretty hot day as well. So I had a walk along it, the bit that has got water in it, and was chatting to some of the trust members. Of course, they're all volunteers. Mm. And there were people standing in the canal, sort of clearing weeds. There were other people laying bricks and some of the old locks, but there was a hell of a lot going on, and I thought, this is, why didn't I know about this? So I was chatting to a guy, and I've forgotten his name now, Dave begins with M, maybe Mella, something like that. It was in the blog, and he said, we got talking, and I was chatting about Hidden Wiltshire, and he said, well, I've actually sketched out a walk around the local area to include Laycock and the canal. And he said, I've just roughly typed up in a Word document. I've got no further than that. He said, you're welcome to my notes. And if you can make a walk out of it, then, carry on. So that's what I did. And I ended up with two or three different routes. And the route that, again, Stu and I did this one, the route we ended up doing was 7 or 8 miles, I think. I think it was nearer 7. So not too bad. And it was easy going. It was pretty much mostly flat. So we did it in February this year. We started off in Laycock. It was a pretty grim day when we left Shrewton and headed over to Laycock. But from the time we got there, it was clear blue skies, absolutely mad difference between the rain and that we started off in. So we parked up in the National Trust car park at Laycock.
Yeah, it's a good sized car park.
Yes, yeah, it's really big, and I'm a National Trust member, so you get to park for free.
Yeah.
So that was really convenient. So we wandered into, and we got there, we decided to go really early because just to avoid the crowds. And even though it's February and it was during school term time, Laycock's always busy. And I said in my blog, it's become a bit of a theme park.
Well, they've had so many movies that have been filmed there that it's on the tourist trail now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Were they filming anything when you went?
No, there was...
Like Cranford or, or some other...
There was only...
Costume drama.
Only me taking photographs, that was the full extent of it.
Yeah, of course they filmed a bit of Harry Potter, didn't they, in the area, so...
And of course, you know, Laycock, some would say, was the cradle of photography.
Yes.
Fox Talbot is widely sort of credited with inventing the photographic form that we use these days. The French, I think, before invented another form, the daguerreotype, slightly before. So there's a bit of a sort of discussion as to who truly invented photography. And then there was a thing about, or was it even Fox Talbot? Because I think he managed to patent the process. But he, you know, he lived in Laycock. And he's buried in the churchyard there. There's no doubting it's a very, very pretty village, as everybody knows, because everybody's been there.
Yeah.
It's always crawling with tourists, apart from at 8 o'clock on a cold Tuesday morning in February, when it was... But again, you know, obviously people live there, so there's cars parked everywhere. So it's difficult to get any really good photographs without having loads of cars in it. And... you know, every single building seems to be selling something. Everybody's got a little cottage industry going and, you know, trying to make some money out of where they live. And there were just advertising signs everywhere. So not really my cup of tea. So we went to the church, St. Cyriac's Church, really to see if we could find Fox Talbot's grave, but couldn't find it. Didn't look terribly hard, to be honest. But had a mooch around there. But fascinating church, though. Amazing building. 14th century. I think it was, even though it's quite early, it was choir practice or something. There was something going on in the church, so I didn't go in. But from there, we went across down a little lane, which is called Nethercote, to a ford and a really old pack horse bridge. I mean, God knows how long it goes, how old it is. But, you know, think pack horse bridge over a little brook, and that was it. It was just a sort of perfect example. And it crosses something called Bide Brook, which is spelled B-I-D-E or B-Y-D-E, one of the two. And spellings became a bit of an issue in the course of the day, spellings of places. So we travelled over there. We headed towards Raybridge, which when I wrote the blog, and I think on the Facebook site, I did a couple of entries about it. I think when I first found the Wilts and Barts Canal, and then later on when I posted the blog, and then it generated a whole discussion about how you spell Raybridge, and whether it's R-E-Y or R-A-Y. And at Ray Bridge, there was a place which I'll talk about in a minute called Ray Mill House.
I love the way on social media we go down these little rabbit holes of, like, it's critically life important to know.
Yeah.
How does one spell Ray Bridge?
Is it an E or is it an A?
Yeah.
But of course, you know, when a lot of these places were named, people couldn't spell anyway. No, so no. They didn't really care.
Well, I think it's David Dawson said that I think Urchfont has got, dozens of different spellings.
Yeah, that's right. But Ray Bridge, on the map, it's spelled R-E-Y on the OS map, certainly the one I was looking at. There's an amazing bridge there over the River Avon. So you've moved from the Bide Brook, which is a tiny little brook, with a little Packles bridge, and then you get this incredible bridge over the Avon. And I read that the bridge carries what used to be a very, very important trading route, sort of quite a long-distance trading route. And there's a farmhouse nearby called Cuckoo Bush Farm, which, again, it's thought that it was an old drover's inn, which points perhaps to the importance of this as an old trading route across the valley there. But we then headed towards Ray Mill House, which I mentioned before, which is spelled R-A-Y. And I've got ants all over me. So Raymill House is famed for being owned by, I never remember a proper title, Camilla Parker Bowles was. In fact, she was Camilla Parker Bowles when she bought the place, when she got divorced from her husband.
So our future Queen of England.
That's the one, yeah. Well, you don't call her the future Queen, do you? She's also Duchess of something.
No, I think, I don't know the technicalities of it all. It seems to change every time, but I thought technically she'd be the, a Queen Consort or something or other. But the King's missus.
Yeah.
The future
well,
King's missus.
Well, he's not the
King yet, is he? No, but he's not. Stop you doing it again, splitting hairs.
Well, God almighty. He's not a queen, is he? So, not as far as we're aware.
No.
But, so it's important to get these things right. Anyway, Camilla bought this house in 1994 after her divorce from her husband. And Hello magazine, which everybody will know I'm an avid reader of, and I buy it religiously every week, month, or whenever it comes out. There was an article, because I was Googling Raymill House, and I knew that Camilla owned it or had owned it, and I was just intrigued as to what it looked like, really. And the first hit was Hello magazine.
Oh, there you go.
So I hope nobody finds that in my search history. It's pretty impressive looking house. I mean, inside looks a bit garish to me, but not my taste of decor. But
I mean, she's lived in Wiltshire for years because they used to own the house in Corsham, didn't
they?
That's
right,
Nick Mason now owns.
Yeah. Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah. But it made me laugh when they said that she bought it in 1994. Because it was only a 10-minute drive from Prince Charles's house in Tetbury.
And in Tetbury?
I thought, well, she's got a hell of a car. She can do that in 10 minutes.
That's stretching the truth somewhat.
Yeah, so I then, being anal about these things, I then put it in Google Maps to see how long it would take to drive from Laycock to Tetbury. And actually, it's a lot quicker than you think. But it was still about half an hour. It certainly wasn't 10 minutes.
No.
I thought, blimey, I didn't realise it was as close as that.
Yeah.
Anyway, just so she could be just up the road from Prince Charles, that's apparently why she bought this house. But the thing that was sort of an ironic smile, really, but the fact that she keeps it today, she still owns it, she keeps it as a base. I mean, this is thumping great mansion in Wiltshire.
It's like when you're getting fed up with your partner. Most people may have a spare room that they can go sulk in.
Yeah.
She has a spare house.
Spare, country mansion. I normally go in the garage. But anyway, this house just presumably sits empty for most of the time. And the footpath goes all around sort of one side of it, and it was like, it was like a prison camp. I mean, you could see the roof and a couple of chimneys, but bristling with cameras and
Fort Knox.
Absolutely. And the ugliest fencing you've ever seen. I mean, it was just how on earth they got planning permission to put these fences up, and, barbed wire and everything. But we did get to one point. So we kind of like headed across, following a footpath from the house towards the canal. And as you got close to the canal, you climb up ever so slightly up a slight rise, and then you can see more of the house from a distance. So we joined the canal at the part where the sort of the water runs out, if you like. So the bit that they've dug and has filled with water, which isn't very long, sort of ends at the bit nearest Laycock, and that's where the towpath starts. You get onto the towpath. Gets very muddy there, by the way. Being February, we had to sort of plough our way through quite a lot of mud. But then we got up onto the towpath, and there's a little interpretation board with information about the canal there and more about the wildlife. And it is beautiful, and it was despite being February, it was a beautiful, still a beautiful sunny day. It was actually quite warm, so we meandered along there for a while. And in fact, it was so lovely, and there was a little bench. We decided to have an early coffee, and we sat down by the canal and just sort of put the world to rights, as Stu and I tend to do, and met a lovely couple there who knew all about Hidden Wiltshire. I never got their names. I can't remember. Stu reckoned they lived in Corsham, and I thought Bradford-on-Avon, or the other way around. But if they listen to this, then maybe they'll say, oh, yeah, I remember that miserable old bloke sitting by the canal. That stretch is probably only maybe a mile or so where you're making your way towards Pewsham Lock or Locks. And it's raised up on an embankment. It's quite high. And to your left, the River Avon sort of, snakes. It comes right up to the canal and then almost like an oxbow, which one day the two parts of the U-bend will meet and it will become an oxbow lake. But it's over by, it's quite close to Lackham College, the agricultural college. You're sort of walking up there, and again, the wildlife. The first time I went along there, when my son's car was being serviced, I saw kingfishers along there, and it was just beautiful. I was going to read a little bit about the canal and what it was all about. Because the interpretation board with the history of the canal, you don't get to that until you get to Pewsham Locks. I posted quite a few photographs of that stretch of the canal, and but the history of it. So it was completed in 1810, which seems to be a bit of a sort of like a throwaway remark. They just completed it in 1810.
Yeah.
I mean, the canal is 52 miles long. You don't just knock a canal like that up in a year.
Yeah.
How many years did it take them? And bearing in mind they didn't have diggers and all sorts, and it would be built by navvies.
It
would have taken years and years and years. It's an incredible achievement. But it was completed in 1810 and links the Kennet and Avon Canal at Symington to the River Thames at Abingdon. Obviously, canals were built in those days for not for leisure purposes as we use them now, but for carrying freight. And coal was the most important commodity that they carried on the canal. And it was coal that was supplied London, Chippenham, Melksham, hence the sort of route of it. And there was another canal, which I'd never heard of, the North Wilts Canal, which opened in... 1819, and that links the Wilts and Barts Canal with the Thames and Severn Canal, another one I'd never heard of, between Swindon and a place called Latton near Cricklade, it says here. So the height of activity there was the 1830s, and as the board says, ironically, the height of activity was carrying raw materials of iron, brick, stone, timber and aggregate for the building of the Great Western Railway. And of course the railways finished off the canals, so they're effectively building for the competitor. And as it says here, the completion of the railway marked the beginning of the end for the canal, and its trade and use declined until it was abandoned in 1914. So it only really was used for 100 years. In 1977, I think the Canal Trust was formed, and that's when they started the work of restoring the canal. And in talking to the people that I met that first time, they intend doing the entire 52 miles at some point.
Wow.
Which is... And since I posted the blog, and in fact, a lovely lady commented on the blog that her husband, who sadly passed away, was one of the trust members and had been working on it for years. She thanked us for the blog and said how interesting it was to read. And there was somebody else, I think, commented on the Facebook post that accompanied the blog that she currently works for the trust on the canal. They're obviously doing it in sections, because after Pewsham, there's not really... It's not evident at all for some distance, and I'm sure the other side of the A4 there's another bit where you can see it. But at Pewsham, there were three locks there, all in various states of disrepair or restoration. In fact, the second time I went, they seem to have gone backwards. But I think that was because they were having to basically take things down and then rebuild them. So they were dismantling locks and brick by brick.
Yeah.
And then, you know, presumably, you know, new cement and what have you. But what they had done was looking fantastic. It was looking like a new canal, albeit yeah. built with old, you know, the old bricks, original yeah. bricks. So it is going to be fantastic one day. And there was a lock keeper's cottage, which they're rebuilding as well. One of the locks being was really heavily damaged in the Second World War, when the army used to use it for practicing demolition.
Yeah.
So that was in pretty sorry state. But I think one of the things that really caught my eye as we were walking along it was these little, they look like sinks, like a sink you would have in your bathroom. And they're called horseshoe spill weirs. And these things, there was actually an engineering drawing of how these things are built. And they're really quite elaborate. And when you look at it, it just looks like this sink next to the towpath.
Yeah.
But they're there to regulate the height of the water in the canal. So if it gets too high, then it overflows into these spill weirs and then away. And one of them certainly drained away down into the River Avon. But when you see the engineering drawings, they're really quite elaborate and very sophisticated piece of engineering.
Mm.
So anyway, we spent quite a long time there, and then from there we sort of headed off over towards Pewsham, and basically where the A4 meets the A342, which goes to Devizes at Old Derry Hill. And you're right next to a really very grand looking house called Pewsham House. There's the driveway to Pewsham House. And I looked at it, I thought, it looks like an Elizabethan mansion,
yeah.
but built in 1892. So I don't really know anything about it or the history of it or the story behind it, but an amazing, yeah, lovely looking house. And then from there you head up towards Knockets Hill, which again, bizarre name, Knockets, where does that come from? What's the origins? I've got a feeling when I did the Facebook post, somebody did chime in and say, this is where Knockets comes from. But there's some lovely sort of farm cottages at the top of the hill. And then you kind of go down a little track that goes past the cottages and heads stops at some fields, and then you have to cross the fields. And up to your left, there's what I thought was really quite an ugly looking house called Knockets Hill Farm, which is where the composer Sir Michael Tippett lived. Again, don't know how old it was, but to me, I mean, it looked like something out of the 1960s.
Yeah.
It was not the most attractive of houses, and I'm sorry to whoever lives in there now, but I'm sure they've kind of kept it as Michael Tippett left it.
I know, I saw a photo of it. It looked like something that it was like almost a prefab house, yeah, someone had bought from MFI. Yeah.
It's quite big, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's big.
Big house.
But the windows were all in weird places.
Mm. I know Alice Cambry, who follow on the Facebook group, she said that she thought there was an indoor swimming pool in the house, so that gives you an idea of how big it was. So from having passed Knockets Hill Farm and Michael Tippett's house, we sort of stopped at a cattle grid, and you know, we had our lunch, and we're looking out across, you know, way to the north, all the way across Chippenham, right across the sort of, you know, all the way across Wiltshire, fantastic views up there. But we headed quite steeply uphill. It was the only steep uphill bit that we found all day, really. Because I'd seen on the map something, I'd seen an Iron Age hill fort mentioned, and it's called Naish Hill hill fort. Where when you get there, I mean, we're looking at this field of long grass and some covering up the earthworks. There is almost nothing to see of Naish Hill Iron Age hill fort.
This reminds me of when I went to look at a long barrow on Kingsplay Hill, and the long barrow had been sort of eroded and ploughed over, and it just looked more like a pimple in the
field.
Yeah.
In fact, I posted one of the worst photographs I've ever taken on the on the blog, and it was basically I was stood by a fence looking at some telegraph poles above my head, and whatever I did, there was no way I could remove those or,
yeah,
you know, photograph around them, trying to sort of photograph the earthworks of this pathetic hill fort. But it's quite a lot of finds there. Roman pottery found there. Yeah. I think some of that might be at Devizes at Wiltshire Museum. And of course, that whole area is very rich in Roman history.
Yeah, it is.
Just
yeah.
to the south, there was a Roman road, and up at Sandy Lane, there is the site of what was a Roman settlement, and which they think started as an inn. And I can't remember which Roman road it is, but that very important Roman road that cuts through there.
Well, funny enough, it's the Roman road that we saw the other night over at Beckhampton.
Yes,
it leads all the way
yes,
to Avebury.
You're right, it is.
And along the route to the A4.
Yeah. But they think this settlement started as just a traveller's inn on the Roman road,
yeah.
And then grew. And I keep meaning to sort of go back and see if I can see that, because apparently you can see the remains, but it's on private land, but you can see it from
right.
accessible land. So, yeah, you know, a very important area for the Romans. So, having peered over this gate and taken pictures of telegraph poles, we turned left there and just went up the lane for literally 100 metres and went behind some farm buildings into some fields. And again, another bizarre looking house, and it's called Kilima Farm, which again, unusual name, Kilima, Kilima Farm. And I wasn't able to find out anything about Kilima Farm, but the house is really striking. I mean, it looked like not a very rich farmer's house. I mean, to me, it looked, I don't know, God, pick a number, 18th, 19th century,
yeah.
but a very sturdy. I'm reading a Thomas Hardy book at the moment, and it looks like something that would come out of a Thomas Hardy novel. Very, very sturdy, square house, very striking. And I've got absolutely no idea. The only thing I could find out was that Kilima Farm has a campsite. So
right.
That's all I could find out. But again, sort of from there, followed the footpath. You'll find the route on the blog site. We came to, you know, what truly is a big F-off house, a big, huge mansion, Bowden Park, which lots of people have heard of, but it's very difficult to see from public roads. And there are a couple of footpaths that go right round the edge of the estate. But, you know, massive mansions and outbuildings. The stables and outbuildings as big as a small village, never mind the house itself. So to that extent, I suppose it is hidden because you can't see it unless you're on the footpath next to it.
Yep.
Again, you know, it's probably not quite as old as it looks, or I don't know, maybe it's 1796. It was built for somebody called Bernard Dickinson. Doesn't sound like a very 18th century name, does it? But, you know, once again, slave money, slave estates that they owned in Jamaica, and the money was used to build Bowden Park. 1849, it was bought by John Gladstone, who was the brother of the Prime Minister, William Gladstone. And then in 1967, Arnold Weinstock, Lord Weinstock, who I think was he chairman of General Electric? I know he was always famously described as Margaret Thatcher's favourite businessman.
Oh, yes. I've heard of this link with him in that house.
Yeah.
Just remembered, yeah.
That being of the age and remembering Thatcher's face very well. I remember her, you know, spending quite a lot of time with Weinstock.
Yeah. But he passed away, didn't he?
Yeah, he died. Can't remember what year he died. I didn't write it down here. And then his wife survived him. She carried on living there until she died. And then it was sold in 2020, apparently.
Yeah.
And it was on the market for 35 million quid. I did wonder whether to put in a cheeky bid, but I'm sure they would have accepted 300,000 quid. But It sold, and I've got no idea who to. I'm sure there are websites that will tell you these things, but I spent a lot of time trying to figure out who is in there now, and it was a bit weird because, you know, whatever way I Googled it, nothing came back. So whoever owns it is a secretive person.
Yeah.
And is hidden away in Bowden Park somewhere.
Yeah.
So again, it'd be interesting to know. Probably some Russian oligarch, I expect.
Yeah. Cool.
So from there, we dropped down down a hill across some... In fact, the footpath itself went across a field, arable, but nobody sort of struck across it and reinstated the path. It had been... It was I can't remember if there was anything growing in it, or perhaps it was just being ploughed or something. Anyway, we went around the edge and headed towards Bewley Common. And then we took a bit of a detour. We went into Bewley Green because I'd read about Bewley House, which is supposedly 14th century. And I'd read that it was open to the public, but there was great big high gates, sort of, you know, 10-foot high gates, firmly shut, and certainly wasn't open to me. And I could only see the chimneys.
They knew you were coming, you see,
yeah,
so they shut
quick, here he comes.
Shut the gates.
Bolshy, what's it? Keep him out. So couldn't really see it, but I'm told it's very quite an impressive house. Don't really know anything about it. I did read, I forgot to write it down. There was some artist lived there, quite an eccentric artist, and not sure who's in there now. Beautiful gardens, because there was another gate, which was just iron gates that you could see through. Beautiful gardens, looked lovely. And then from there, it was just sort of back down across another elaborate bridge across the Avon at the bottom of the road down from Bowden Hill.
Mm.
And we sort of walked back across the park at Laycock Abbey, had a mooch around there. But lovely walk, some interesting buildings, interesting houses along the way. You know, clearly a lot of wealth in the area, historic wealth, and probably currently as well. And there was lots more big houses that we didn't even see. But the canal, an amazing sort of undertaking to restore all that. And that's going to be interesting to sort of see that as it develops over the years. Not that I'll live to see it finished. I think maybe even you won't live to see it finished.
Yes, that might be beyond me as well.
So
maybe our children.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, well worth going to and supporting the guys and what they're doing, and I'm sure that they'll. You know, I think I made a donation after that. There's all sorts of leaflets. Great website. They do a really good website as well.
Okay.
So
we wrap up.
Yeah. I don't know. We've been waffling for now, but. I'm sure you can cut out most of it. I've said.
I've cut out all the rubbish.
Cut out everything I said. Thanks, Steve Dixon, for the music, as ever. So the bit in the middle, again, we've used it, I think, once before, and it's a bit gloomy, but it's called Dark and Lonely Water. And we have used it once before, and I think we used it for the Font Hill podcast. So Steve... wrote that, and he's lifted some there's some, you'll hear a voice in it, which is, God, who was the actor? I want to say Donald Sinden, but it was
Donald Pleasance. Yeah,
but it was a public information film made back whenever, basically because they had a spate of kids playing in water and drowning in water, and of course canals are a popular place for kids. So I thought, well, that's a cheerful thing to put in.
Yeah. So children, if you're listening to this podcast, make sure you listen to Donald.
Yes. And heed his words. Yeah. Don't go showing off and playing in canals. So thank you, Steve. Next episode, website for show notes and stuff, and all the links and the online shop. There's still books available. We need to end that offer soon. It's on it. It's on offer at the moment, the book, £20, free postage, but I think, you know, lots of people pay full price for that, so I think we need to put the price up again at some point. We did say that was going to be a summer offer. You've got that look in your eye, so no.
No, I'll have a plan.
Well, you've got a plan. You're going to give them away on street corners. So, yeah, website and next episode, by my reckoning, will be Sunday the 4th of September.
Yes. Don't know what we'll talk about, but we'll work it out.
Yeah, well, we should have stuff to talk about by then. If nothing else, your holidays.